This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Confrontation! Confrontation!
Confrontation!
Yes! That's what you want! Hey!
Derek believed he'd been possessed by the spirit who supposedly slaughtered children and subsequently had been hanged. This experience left him completely drained, and it took the crew a while to calm him down.
That's what you want!
Oh, he's a bad one. He's a bad one. He's evil. He's evil.
Welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Tonight's a special night for us here in the Darkness on the Edge of Town. This is a guest that we've been working on having be a part of our show since we launched over 2 years ago, and it's with a great pleasure that Tim and I bring our first guest on for the evening. We're going to do away with most of the announcements we usually do and news and information. We're going to go right to our guest, who has graciously committed, to a two-hour interview with us this evening. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town, Mr. Derek Acora. Good evening, Mr. Acora.
Good evening, Dave.
Thank you very much for joining us, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
I have, as I just briefly mentioned, you were one of the top people we definitely wanted to have on the show the minute we were able to launch. You've been a success on TV in Britain for quite a while now. You know, of course, we all became aware of you on the show Most Haunted. You've, you know, certainly taken it by storm. And then you've brought new shows as well, like Derek Acora's Ghost Towns and the new Egyptian show that you're working on. So it's been, you know, it's been really kind of cool to watch somebody that has the stature you have in the paranormal field. And, you know, I mean, there's certainly labels out there that have been stuck to you. And tonight we're going to explore a little bit about you, learn a little bit about this. And, you know, hopefully we can separate some fact from fiction. I'd like to start off in this first hour here talking to you a little bit about you and finding out what got you started in your abilities, and has this something that's always been a part of you since childhood? Maybe you could start us off. When was your first actual kind of, you know, awareness that you had the ability to communicate with the dead and you had psychic tendencies?
Yes, Dave. Well, it actually happened in my grandmother's house. She lived in an old Victorian house, like four stories, and both my older brother, Colin, and my older sister and myself went to school right opposite Gran's house. It was virtually just across the road. And we came home from school this one afternoon, and we were sent immediately right up to the top of the house to where a room had been like converted for like a playroom for us.
Right.
And we were playing, whatever, and we were called down by Gran because our evening meal was ready, our dinner. And Colin, my older brother, and Barbara raced down the stairs from the top of the building. I was, with being the youngest, I was the last one to get virtually down.
Sure.
And I got to the last landing, where there was two bedrooms, one either side. And I just, as I got there, I turned to the right, and I heard a noise, and I looked, and I saw this man standing in the doorway of one of the bedrooms. And I froze, because my first reaction as a six-and-a-half-year-old boy was, there's a stranger in my grand's house I've never seen before. So I was petrified.
Right.
Now, however, this man walked over towards me, and he spoke to me. He ruffled my hair and told me a few things. And he said I could go down the stairs then, the last set of stairs, and tell my gran, which I did. I bolted down the stairs, out into the kitchen area where gran was actually doing the evening meal, and, you know, trying to get her attention to tell her there was a strange man on the landing. Well, Gran looked at me, got hold of my hand, didn't say anything, and then suddenly got me up the stairs and said, where? And I said, there. The man wasn't there anymore.
Hmm.
So we came back down the stairs, and Gran was talking to Mum, and suddenly she said, sit down at the table, son. That was my Gran. And I sat at the table. She went to a cupboard and opened the cupboard door, and there was this big old tin box. She got it out of the cupboard, took the lid off it, and turned the contents of the tin box onto the table, onto the linen. And she turned these old, like, images and photographs over of different faces I'd never seen before, and then asked me, could I see the man in any of these photographs? So I looked, and there was a lot of images of different people, and sure enough, there was one. Then I spotted another one. And I picked the two of them up and said, this is the man that I've seen up there. And the long story of it was that it turned out to be that my grandfather, who'd passed away two and three quarters years before I was actually born, he was a seafarer. And he was away at sea, and he used to work in the engine rooms of the ships. And there had been a bad accident down in the engine room where my grandfather was injured and damaged, so much so that before they could get him, I believe, as the story goes, that he was in the middle of the Indian Ocean at the time. And before they could get him to a shore hospital base and what have you, septicemia set in, and he died of the consequence of the injuries. And it was my grandfather who came back.
Now, when you saw him standing on the landing and in the doorway there, was he just as solid as you and I? Or was,
you know, Dave, he was. He was so tangible. I could recognize through feature his clothing, you know, even coloration as he's showing himself to me, his hair coloring, certainly the features of his face. He was a big man, a big, strong-looking man. And it was just, I was in fright at the time because I thought this was a stranger in my grand's house.
Right.
I didn't understand about spirits, ghosts, or anything like that at that age. I'd never had it explained to me.
When you realized after this, when your grandmother took you down and showed you pictures and then explained to you that this man was dead, how did that impact you at the age of 6.5 years old that you realized that you'd just seen a ghost?
Well, it shook me. I can't really say at what level. It just, I went into like a quietude, a quietness. And then I know a little bit later on I cried. And I remember, going to my mum for a hug and mum saying, don't you worry, son, you know, your gran, because gran was a medium, a psychic like me, before me. And she said, your gran will, you know, explain to you everything about, you know, what has actually happened, and you're not to fear or worry or anything like that.
So you had a lot of support growing up with this ability then? It wasn't.
Oh, I was so fortunate, yes. I had my gran, who was a psychic medium. I had my mum, who was a loving mother. And I come from a loving family. So I was very fortunate because Gran, over the years going forward, really, really settled me down into a great, deeper understanding of what I'd experienced, and also, you know, tried to point out in a very gentle way that I had these gifts, which I would explore and no doubt develop later on, and then eventually work for spirit.
Did your brothers or sisters have the abilities that you were able to define as well?
No, at the time, both Colin and Barbara didn't show any of these signs. And it was only at that point when Gran made the statement to Mum, apparently, that he's the one that follows me.
All right. Have they ever developed them through life, or is it just, you know, like most of us, we all have some little thing that'll happen from time to time, but it's not nearly as pronounced as you have?
Absolutely. I mean, every person, as I understand through my experience over the years now working within the metaphysical and the spiritual aspects of life, I do know that everyone is born with the psychic abilities. To a degree, some great minds have said that, you know, it's our birthright, it's our heritage. However, there are some who are meant to go forward and some who will stay at the point of a level of intuition, if not a point where they can pick up things, but it doesn't go beyond generally sensing. Maybe they don't need to develop that far forward in whatever pathway or life that they have chosen for themselves going into older life. Maybe they don't need to develop those gifts in order to, you know, live their lives within their life's incarnation.
Well, that's interesting to me, too, and we'll get into that a little bit with the reincarnation, which I understand is how we'll learn about Sam. But yeah. Now let's talk a little bit more with this. Now, as a child, you've suddenly realized that you do this. Now, did that I'd like to take that back even maybe a little bit further. Was there anything that led to that? Were you, you know, in an accident as a child? Were you, you know, developed some high fever or a potentially deadly disease that you came through that suddenly might have awakened this? Is there anything like that that you can keystone that flipped the switch and turned Derek Acora on?
Well, you know, there were two things. That's a fantastic question, Dave, because it hasn't been asked me ever before in all these years. But looking back on it, honestly, I remember one occasion when apparently in my grand's home, there was she didn't have an inside toilet. Those old houses used to have outside toilets.
Sure.
And the outside toilet had, they were quite tall. And, of course, me being a young male and what have you, a young boy, climbing and what have you, and apparently I used to climb up onto the wall and go around and stand on the top. And one particular day I did have a fall. And, you know, whether I landed on my head, I don't know, but I came through it. But even before then, when I was a young child, a baby, I was in hospital conditions with high fever. Caused by my non abilities to take in too much food, so my stomach gut was like shrinking, and the warnings were from the doctors to Mum, we don't know whether he's going to come through this, because, you know, in actual fact it's like a starvation. But I came through that. So whether those two things also, on two different occasions, one when I was a little boy and the other you know, when I was about 4.5, 5, there was a contribution, I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, and the reason I ask that is it seems that a lot of the mediums and psychics that we've come across, you know, their life with this field started after a traumatic experience. You know, either illness as a child, a head injury due to a car accident, you know, something major that turned it on. What do you feel? I mean, I know that we just briefly scratched on the subject of, you said that you believe some people or everybody has some version of this ability. Do you think that there is just a hidden switch that can be flipped, or do you believe that it is a predetermined set of abilities that you do, you know, prior to coming into this life? You decide what your abilities will be when you come here.
Well, I most definitely believe, because of the truth that I've been shown from the spiritual realm all these years, that you know, there is a predestined situation and condition that applies to all mediums that actually work eventually for spirit. However, I can't discount in any way, shape, or form that along the way, certain people who may have, you know, incurred some kind of accident, that switch thing or situation is not actually switched on. So we can look at both sides, really. But averagely, overall, I would say the predestined things are most definitely in place. And as it's been shown me and explained to me over the years, but through my guide Sam, my grandmother before, I was one of those that was meant to come onto this earth plane, into this life's incarnation, to, at a certain point in my life, demonstrate and do the work for spirit.
I'm interested, too, when you're doing this, and you're now 6.5 years old, you've seen this first spirit, you've come through this, do you start noticing now that Pandora's box is open, do you start seeing ghosts on street corners and in every window? Do you see them all as hard, solid form humans like you saw your grandfather, or do you see them some as like a mist? Do you see some as a light form? Do you see some, you know, just like a you know, the Casper, the friendly ghost look, that kind of globulous?
Yes. Well, you know, Dave, again, a fantastic question of reality here is because I, through my experience and only through my eyes and my hearing is that, you know, along the way of development of your gifts, you are going to see in varying degrees different sorts of, as you mentioned, you know, a mist, non-tangible figure, dotted outlines, and things like that, because they're all part and parcel of what a young medium will actually have to undergo and experience for what we call the inner and self-development, until to a point where in years, which it takes years, not minutes or weeks, years, that you have developed your gifts to such a honed way that you have this tangible aspect best part of the time rather than all these different aspects of build-up.
When you... Once you opened that door up and it happened, did spirits start coming to you? Were they shaking you on the bed and saying, Derek, wake up, I have something to tell you, or Derek, I need you to pass this message on? Was that ever interfering in your life?
Yes, it did to a degree because, you know, the great belief system is this. In the world of spirit, the spirit people who've truly gone over, there's no time situation, clock watching or anything like that as we have here in our physical, mundane living life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, through enthusiasm and generally, that's all it is. They see a light here, physically walking, and they're drawn to it. They know that you're an instrument, and they will try their best, bless them, to make that communication with you, whatever way or shape or form, until you've got to say, hey, this has got to stop. It's no good. I've got to have my sleep. There's got to be a discipline placed in here. A discipline, a code, not so much ethics, but a code.
Right, like boundaries. You set boundaries with the spirit, saying, I'm here for you, but you need to leave me alone.
Absolutely.
When I'm in the shower and when I'm in bed. This is
absolutely,
this is Derek,
yes.
Akora time, not your time.
Absolutely, yes.
Do you get to...
Yes.
Yeah, see, that's what...
And that is a fact. And, you know, my beautiful grandma told me all about this discipline. And, of course, then I, how can I say, I practiced this. And, of course... used to say to me these words, simple words, son, Derek, the spirit people are not in control of you. You are in control when you ask them to step forward, to announce themselves, and whatever they've got to say. And then once it's done, then you tell them to step back. And of course, if I was to stay open, as we call it, and I went into a supermarket, or I went into a, I don't know, a shop, or I was to go on a bus or on a boat, there would be invariably spirit people around physical people, and they would try to attract my attention.
I've got to guess that starts to get a little embarrassing or frustrating from time to time for you then.
Well, the thing is, as I say, from a very early age, I was shown how to stop that from actually happening, and after a short initiation of those experiences, I got on top of that. So basically, and it has been for a long time, Dave, whenever I'm working for spirit, I'm open. When I finish working, I've got a life outside that also, like in my life presently. I'm a husband, a father, a grandfather, and I've got things to do in those times that I'm not working for spirit.
When you were growing up with this ability, were there spirits that came to you that truly just frightened you and seemed to try to scare you out of doing what you're doing?
Sometimes, yes, in the early days. And, of course, I'll give you a little, you may laugh at this, but it's genuinely true. My grandma, when I talked about the outdoor toilets, was one of the very proud first people in her road to get the builders in and to change a bedroom into an indoor bathroom.
Right.
One of the first in the street, in the road. And when it was complete, naturally, you know, as a young boy, you're inquisitive and you want to go, instead of being cold out in the British weather,
right,
in an outdoor toilet, into an indoor toilet, you know, and nice and cozy and warm. And I actually went up into the toilet and closed the door and put the lock on and just sat there just enjoying the ambience, if that's the right word, of a toilet.
Sure.
And suddenly, because the door was so highly painted in a very deep gloss paint, suddenly I'm looking as a little boy sitting on the loo, forgive me, I don't mean to be crude, but sitting on the loo, looking at the door, and suddenly a face appears, comes out from the paintwork, past me. I ducked with shock. Then another face appeared, then another face, and it just seemed to be a realm of faces, you know, different Caucasian colours, ladies, men, what have you. That frightened me witless. I couldn't get out of that toilet quick enough, running down, nearly fell down the stairs, again going running to my grandma. And you know, crying and saying, well, you know, what was this? What was it? And she explained to me they were the spirit people that during the course of my physical life were the ones designated to come in alongside me at different times and stages in my life to help me within my realm as a medium. And they were all friendly spirit people who'd moved on and had experiences in their individual lives that I would actually endure that particular experience, that they were there ready to buffet anything negative or anything that was could be harmful to me along my way in my mediumship.
But at least they could have waited to show you that they were there at a totally different time, right?
I said that exactly.
But you know what? You got to look at it this way, Derek, because a lot of people that run into a ghost, they're not sitting on the loo. So.
No.
You know, at least you were in the right place for when they scared it out of you. You were right there for it.
Absolutely. I was in the right place. I didn't want to say.
That's right. We're going to take our first break of the hour. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby. But she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
When Dave was a young boy, he once awoke to find himself staring directly into the eyes of a shadow person. Turns out it was just his life-size cardboard cutout of Donny Osmond.
Go away and go. Go away and go.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to midnight Central Time. If you can't listen to us live, remember that we archive our shows within 24 hours, so you can listen to them off our site directly by going to darknessradio.com. Click on the Listen tab, and there you'll find all of our shows from the last 2 years. Hope that you will listen, and please give us an email. Let us know what you think of the shows. Any guest suggestions or ideas, we're always open for it. You can always email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Now we're going to get back into our interview. This evening we're speaking to famed psychic and medium Derek Acora, and we're right now just kind of going through Derek's life from youth up to find out about his abilities and what led him to the position in life he's in now. And Derek, I'd like to go in a little bit more now. So as a teenager and these powers begin to develop, at what point do you realize that you have a spirit guide, and how do you come into contact with Sam?
Well, the very first time that I'd actually been explained to my from my grandmother earlier on that I have a spirit guide, not knowing what it meant in actual fact, but in time, that he would make his own personal contact with me. She said to me he would either show himself to me, like seeing him, or he would speak to me, I would hear him. And from there on in, he would know the time that he needs to join me, if you like, in a more full-time basis of, you know, if not a constant link when need be. And I did actually, I was in my mother's home later on, much later on, it would have been 15, 16, when I was sitting in the lounge, and the whole family were there, just generally talking about things and what happened, and suddenly I heard this voice whilst I was sitting on the couch. And it said, Derek, I'm Sam, and I wish to speak to you. And I looked at all the different family members, and I thought, you know, even though Gran had said to me all those years before, I thought, am I going loopy? Am I going crazy?
Right.
So what I did, I took myself out of the living room and up the stairs into the bedroom, and I sat down, and I mentally, in a frightened way, because I was quite frightened, said, speak to me again. Sam, speak to me again. He did just that, and told me that I was going to be, in time to come, a very, very, very trustworthy and worthwhile instrument for spirit. They were his words. The time wasn't quite right, but he just wanted really to introduce himself to me. And I think he said to me also at the time, he'd overheard conversations on numerous occasions between myself, my gran, and my mother, saying that I didn't want to be a psychic. I didn't want to be a medium. All I wanted to do was fulfill and follow a dream I had in my thoughts, my mind, of becoming a professional sportsman, a professional footballer, or soccer player. And he said that he laughed and he giggled, and he said, well, maybe, but there will come the time when I will approach you again. And he looked forward to that, and he backed off, and I didn't have communication with him for quite a little while then.
So you've had this, and you brought up a good point. You said you started to feel like you were maybe going bonkers doing this.
Yes.
When you were growing up, even though you had the support of mom and a good family and a grandmother that understood this ability, did it still make you question your own sanity and maybe even the sanity of your family that this was just so normal when nobody else you knew could do what you did?
Yes, not so much the sanity of my family, but I noticed that when I was, you know, playing out with my mates, my friends, doing whatever we were doing, football, sports, cycling and what have you, if I got some kind of inclination about something, which I did often, I would, if I said something, you know, about the issue, you know, you'd notice then that my friends, my mates, were looking at me, you know, some of them called me weird, strange.
Right.
How did I know that? I remember one particular day, I went to one of my friends' homes for the first time ever been invited round. I don't know whether it was a set-up by Andrew to introduce me to his mum, but I'd never been in his home before. The moment I walked through the front door, I just uttered something about a boxed-off private room, and that there were things that were kept in there that his mum didn't want people to know. And it just came blazing out of me.
Hmm.
And I went straight, so, you know, Andrew said, well, where is it then? And I, on the ground floor of the house, and I walked through like a back kitchen area and went into another room, and sure enough, there it was. It didn't look like a door or anything, and it was like a false door, if you like. And I pushed it, and it opened up. Now, when his mum heard us talking about, she came through from the living room, and she screamed. She said, what are you doing in there with it? And he started explaining that I had talked about this room when I was outside before I come into the house. And I was banned from the house there on.
Wow.
And, you know, these are the sort of things that were happening. So, you know, each time I had these experiences, I'd go back home or I'd be talking to Gran saying, I don't like it. I don't like the feeling of it. I don't like the things where I just get surprised with things, or I say something out that I'm not really thinking about. And, you know, I did, I suppose, for a short period of time. I wondered whether, no matter all the reassurance I had from my gran, even from my mum, whether I was going bonkers.
Now, a lot of the people that we've spoken to in the field, you know, at one point or another have turned to drugs or alcohol to try to quell the voices and the ghosts. Did you ever try to, you know, hide your demons that way and escape from the abilities that you had?
No, I don't think so. I mean, because I had, for a number of years, a very, 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 disciplined way of life, because I did play professional soccer for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
which meant that I had to train, and I trained every single day, apart from match days, and I kept my body in very, very good shape. I didn't smoke in those days, which is unbelievable I do these days. And I drank no different. In actual fact, I was against drinking cigarettes until I was about 28, 29 of years. And then I started, I did start smoking. But as far as the drink, no. No different than any other person.
Okay.
Certainly drink has not got a hold of my life, never has. I never will do.
So you never tried to quell the voices or the spirits by drugging yourself that way?
No.
Okay,
no.
That's great.
I've never taken, actually, apart from alcohol, I've never taken a drug, a soft drug, or a heavy drug ever in my life.
What is your advice for parents out there of children that have your type of ability? What could you recommend to them to help their children through the loneliness and the fear? What would be something Derek Acora could shed light on for that family to maybe help them?
Yes, I would like to. You know, I've been there. I've been on the road of life, of the experience of a psychic, and I would say they need, the youngsters, they need understanding. They need that, what we call tenderness of a loved one, whether it be a mother or a grandfather, of them more than anyone else to understand what is actually going on, either inside or outside. That child, I would say that I feel it's the duty, I suppose, and a responsibility of maybe the parents to seek out the professional help for the child, meaning, i.e., going in the direction of a reputable medium of standing, maybe who's worked for 30, 40 years, and ask for help there, you know, alongside the child, apart from the parents. And if they do it that way, there comes a time within that child's life where they grasp hold of it all and they say, hey, this is not as freaky or as bad as what I once thought. And you know something? I can do something with these gifts to help people, not injure them, hinder them, and I can be a helpful person within society of wherever I'm living.
Do you feel any kind of obligation, being that you've done this, that, you know, if a child or family reached out to you for help, do you feel any kind of obligation to try to help them understand this and be kind of a mentor to people? Are you a mentor?
Yes, David. I've done it over the years. I'm still doing it right to this very day. I mean, I do theater evenings. I'm starting a tour now across Great Britain. And, you know, I'll guarantee you that we'll see maybe over that period of time up to Christmas, there's probably going to be 5, 6, maybe 7 maybe, just as a figure, that we're going to link in where this child has got that and the family are there, and I give them that support, even if it's from distance. I will get in touch with other people within their vicinity of town, area, a medium who can go along and help that youngster. And yes, and I've seen over the years some of these youngsters who've got of age now of development, and they're actually out there working for Spirit. I'm rather proud of that.
How many of the families that do approach you, Derek, or the people even that approach you out in the real world here that claim to have psychic abilities and, you know, or they feel like their children have it? You know, at the events that Tim and I do, we've met people that tell us about their gifted children, and it almost feels like they're pushing them like those
Absolutely.
Beauty pageant children and making them into something more than the children are. Do you feel that is a lot more prevalent than the fact that there's actually just this many more gifted children coming out? Or do you feel that maybe the gifts are there, it's just time is changing and evolving, and the gifts are starting to show themselves more readily?
Well, you know, I'm in agreement with the times are shifting and evolving, and I've been for the last 10 years or so, and I believe now that that's like a cap has been taken off, and there are a lot of youngsters, children, that are coming forward with the right help. They're going to be a force, a beautiful light force on this earth to help people more so than ever before. Also, we must not disregard and take into total honest consideration that there are, I've come across it myself, where, you know, mums and dads, through eagerness and what have you, yes, their child has got a gift or gifts, but, you know, are they pushing them too far, expecting too much of them, when in reality, when it comes to development, maybe that station in life is not for them. Of course, we get that also.
Okay. And we'll ask one more bit of advice from you, and then we'll get back in a little bit more, learning about you and Sam.
Yeah.
What would you say to the person listening right now that feels lonely, despondent, maybe even suicidal, or that they feel they have to quell these things with drugs and alcohol? What can you tell them to maybe help them feel better about the abilities that they have?
Okay. Well, you know, again, I experienced this myself along my pathway in life here in the UK. And the first thing I say is what I would wish if I was going through those conditions themselves. If they find themselves in what we call a one lonely position, I am a great believer that something shared is far greater than being a loner. That person needs to integrate, if not to talk to others, to get a third-party eye view of maybe what is going on in their life. And you know something? The universe is a wonderful thing, David, in the sense that, you know, through people, we can get advice that just happens to trigger something that is absolutely correct for it. I believe spirit works through people, without a doubt. And if we isolate ourselves, we make it more difficult. And of course, then we can go within ourselves, and then it becomes a darkened room and rather impossible to get out of, and depressions. If we share something, we 9 times out of 10, we can be pleasantly surprised that that person we're sharing it with will have something of inspiration to say that will unlock or do something that will help that person go in the right direction, and maybe then those gifts to be realized, to be used in a very positive manner to help mankind. Like I say, I've come across it so often, and I have helped, pitched in there and helped, and I've seen some wonderful turning points for people who actually thought, said very clearly, you know, I don't know where I am. I don't know where I'm going. You know, I just want to take myself off. And if there is a spirit world, get over there quicker and what have you. And there's really, really, that person's got such a good life to look forward to, but there's just a little bit lost. The word is in sharing, and in sharing and not being afraid to offload what your fears, phobias, or what have you. There's always somewhere out there in the universe, in this life, that can help us.
All right. Well, Derek, I appreciate that. We're going to take our second break for this first hour. We're going to be back. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Aren't you glad you are? We'll be right back.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I got
gotta pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from the darkness on the edge of town. Are you ready for some adventure? Swashbuckling action? Pirates? High seas battles? How about a little history, romance, and haunting Celtic mysticism thrown into the mix? If so, you have got to read The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, the new book by author-illustrator Scotty Roberts. Set in England, Ireland, and Scotland of the 16th century, Irish lord Tam O'Hare sets out on a quest to find and rescue a little girl from the hands of the very folk of the Dark Shadowlands. On his way, he runs headlong into adventure and intrigue from all quarters in the form of wolves, foxes, and pirating rabbits. Oh, and did I mention Tam O'Hare is, well, a rabbit? This book will not be available in stores until late this fall. But you can get your advance copy of The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare now by going to www.tamohare.com. That's www.tamohare.com. The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare. You'll never trust a raccoon with a sword again.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at TapsParamag.com.
This show is so frightening, it'll scare the pants off you.
Beat it.
It's people with a dirty mind that think like that.
On second thought, maybe you should just keep them on.
You'd be amazed how often I hear that.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town with Tim Dennis and Dave Schrader.
If you enjoy the paranormal and you like to go out and see some of the most popular and famous reported haunted spots in the United States, we've got something for you. Check out our website at darknessevents.com. You can join Tim and I, along with our very special guests, members of TV's The Ghost Hunters, Jason and Grant, and sometimes other members of the team. We also have guests like Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, Chris Fleming from Dead Famous, and many other speakers. For all the information on our trips and upcoming trips, past trips, please check out our website at darknessevents.com. Right now, we're going to get back into our show. Our guest this evening is Mr. Derek Acora. Most of us recognize Mr. Acora from the TV show Most Haunted. Of course, he's been involved in TV and doing this type of business before Most Haunted. And as we all know, he's still going on after his tenure at Most Haunted has ended. Right now, we're talking to him a little bit about his life growing up and coming to terms with his abilities. Now, let's get to Sam. Now, we've already talked to you about your first meeting with Sam, if you will, when he appeared to you at about, what was it, about 16, did you say?
Yes.
Now, how did you learn about Sam more when he revealed himself to you? This is fascinating to me. I watched an interview with you about this over in Britain, and I'd like to know a little bit more about this so that our viewers and listeners can learn about it as well.
Yes, well, actually, Sam, after the initial communications and what have you, and before that, my grandmother telling me about my guide, but not telling me too much, I had to wait to see what he would say. Sam started to give me, I didn't realize it was Sam that was doing this. I went through a period of time, Dave, where I'd go to bed. I started fearing going to bed because I knew I'd go into these very, very, what appeared to me to be very deep dream state scenarios where suddenly I seemed to be flying. I know it may sound absolutely crazy, this, but I would fly into the scene of my dream. It was as if I was up in the air and then suddenly grounded onto the ground and then suddenly into a scene where there I am in a country where it's very hot. I'm seeing people of darkened skin and I'm hearing chuntering away, talking and what happened. And then suddenly I'd break from that scene, come back to myself, and I'd wake up in a lather of sweat. And I was having these dreams for, oh, God, they would have had to be over a period of 3, 4, maybe 5, 6 months. But each time I sort of flew into the dream, grounded on the soil, I got to know more of what I was actually seeing, where I was, and so on and so forth. And I was in Ethiopia. And okay. I was, I must have been about the fifth sequence of the dream state. There I am with this family, and associating through feelings that this is my family who I belonged with. And then I became not just a viewer from it, looking in on it, but taking part in the, I suppose, the physical dramatization of living there. My family, my father, my mother, my brothers and sisters. And then it just developed and developed. And in between that time, Sam coming to me in my wake state and saying, did you enjoy that experience? This was your family. This is what actually happened and what have you. Until in the end, I stopped fearing it and was looking forward to going to bed to actually go into the sleep state and to finalize what I didn't know what was coming.
Sure.
And then suddenly to be playing away from the village area and to hear this sound of screaming and shouting, and then suddenly a quietness fell on everything, and I just knew something was terribly wrong when I actually got down from the clearing into the village area to see what I saw. My eyes, it was just like unbelievable. It was like there was all the village people, the people there, my own family, my mother and father, my brothers and sisters, all slaughtered. Mm. They were killed by this group of people who'd come from nowhere. And it just, I couldn't think clearly. I hid through fright. And it must have been well over a day in time. Night and day came. And then suddenly I heard a voice and calling my name. And I got myself from behind this covering where I was hidden, and there was Sam. And Sam, in those times, was a seer, an oracle of his time. And he, I suppose when I look back now, after all these years, the man did nothing but good. He walked into many areas. He could tell people things about how things were going to work out for them, crops and so on and so forth, how the year was going to be, and they fed him. Now, because my family had been so horribly slaughtered, Sam just took me on like a father figure, and he said, you must come with me. And from that point on in time, I walked with Sam into many, many areas of Ethiopia, and I listened to him intently, you know, saying the wise things that he said and where people appreciated his help, until there was one point in time when Sam said we were going into an area and we had to be a little bit more cautious because he wasn't sure how the reception was going to be from these people. He'd not, in other words, come across them before. He'd heard things, but he wasn't sure. So we had to be careful. So we got into this area, and all I did was listen. I didn't speak much. I just listened, and they didn't like what he had to say, but have you, and we were ushered out of that area with threats. Sam was glad to get us away, way up into a higher clearing, looking down on this, like, plateau, if you like, where we'd come from. And we hadn't eaten. We were absolutely starving and what have you. And as a young boy, I being hungry myself, I don't know whether, you know, what word you can use, but I was determined that, you know, we were hungry, we were going to eat. So I crawled down from the high part where we were, and it was dark, it was the night time, and I got into that area, and I managed to steal food. And I was on my way back to Sam feeling very good about myself when I heard all this rustle and shouting and screaming. I looked up, and all I could see was a group of faces above me, and it was those people. And I then started to feel like a dull feeling in different parts of my body, and I didn't know exactly what was going on. But they'd speared me in different parts of my body. Mm. And then I felt they left me for dead. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it seems, I don't know whether I've gone into unconsciousness or what, but the next thing I look up, and there's Sam cradling me, holding my upper part of my body, saying that I would now be joining very shortly, and not to worry, not to fear, my family. My mother and father had gone before me, and the eventuality that we would join as friends again in time to come. And I just let go at that moment in time. Now, all that was shown to me in this dream state over that period of time,
mm-hmm.
and it gave me such a reassurance that, you know, I did belong, not just in this physical life, but in a previous life with Sam, and I trusted him.
Well, now, what's really intriguing to me is, tell our listeners, what proof do you have of the spearing that took place?
Well, you know something, I have on my physical body a very, very bold, strong wound to one part of my body that's been there since I was a birth.
And that didn't happen in this lifetime, you were saying, correct?
No, it didn't.
So you've got this spear-like wound that's been a part of your body your whole life.
Absolutely.
Now, have you done a lot of research in reincarnation? Was there any other incarnations between that life and this one for you?
David, I've not done anything at all purposely of reincarnations other than this, purely and simply because this has been enough to cope with.
Right.
It's not saying that I won't do it a little bit later on, maybe when I've, you know, I'm not as busy, I'm not, you know, maybe a retirement age, if I'm allowed to retire, I don't know. And maybe then I will look into it, but this has been sufficient for me up to now in this lifetime.
All right. Well, now you've got the understanding and the familiarity with Sam, and you've been using this. At what point did you start to use your abilities to help other people?
Well, you know, I like I said before, I set out to do professionally full-time mediumship and what have you, I did try to fulfill that dream of being a footballer.
Right.
And I played for a professional football club here in England called Liverpool Football Club. I ended up playing my footballing days in Australia with a team called UFC Lion in the first division of the South Australian League. And it was over there where I started, whilst I'm still playing football, started to get these very, very strong insights when I was around company for the players, the wives, when we went out for barbecues and stuff. And I'd get these things without my wanting these things. And I knew something was happening inside, which was speeding up my process into maybe making that step over.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know, even though there I was a psychic, know that just ahead of me I was going to have a knee injury that would cause me to come out of professional football and, you know, then say to myself, what am I going to do now? What am I actually going to do? I'm not trained up for anything. I've not, you know. And then within a very short space of time, all come flooding back, what my gran had said, what Sam was coming to me and saying to me, you know, you must come back to the UK, you must come back to England, because it's there where you step forth your first steps working for spirit. You know something, I did that, and within less than a month, I'd placed an advertisement in one of the local papers, the Liverpool Echo, offering my services as a psychic, and I got a number of replies. And in those days, I didn't have offices, I didn't have anything that was, you know, cozy or anything. I had to go out to people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the amazing, over a few years, some of the amazing things that I had to endure doing what we call these personal consultations, sitting in midwinter, the British weather, in a garage where there was no heating, sitting there for 5 and 6 hours, maybe doing readings for 12 ladies. I remember one encounter, and I've always loved animals and dogs, but a lady gracefully invited me into her home, a very nice home, in a place called McGull, that's in northern England. And she sat me in the kitchenette area, and she had a group of ladies in the front lounge having sandwiches and I don't know what they were drinking, whether it be lemonade or what, and they were having a righto little party. And I was sat crunched between two Rottweilers, two dogs,
okay.
And those two dogs would not let me move. Every time I needed to go to the loo, they were snarling the teeth. Oh, it was a terrible experience. They were the sort of things that I had to undergo or put up with in the early years of my working for spirit.
Right. Well, it's an amazing life you've led, you know, even if you hadn't met your spirit guide, to have the abilities that you've had and the things that you've had occur to you are just amazing. And getting yourself out there into the world to start helping people, did you ever, you know, we've got about 2 minutes before the top of the hour here, but did you ever feel that accepting money for the gift that you had was wrong?
Yes, I did, actually. I did feel it because, you know, discussions even with my family and what have you. So what I did there was, although I'd made my mind up that it had to be like full time, that I needed to earn my living, to pay my rent or mortgage or look after, you know, my life, I needed to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was, rather foolishly on my behalf, I set a figure on price for these readings so ridiculously low that within the first 6 months I virtually become bankrupt. You know, I just did not charge enough money. And right from the word go, from day one to the day I stopped doing private consultations, which is 10 years ago, and I'll tell you the reason why later, I never, ever charged, as we call it, old age pensioners. They were free of charge.
Great.
And, you know, that goes down. It's known across this country. All those lovely old people, men and women, they used to send me sweets and packages through the post, what they could afford. But I never charged them.
That's great. Well, we're going to take our top of the hour break here. We're going to be back with more with Derek Kikora. Have a little fun. We're going to take some of the questions we've gotten from the listeners. We're going to talk about Most Haunted, and we're going to talk about the future for Derek Kikora. If you're interested in more information on Mr. Kikora, please check out his official website at derekkikora.org. That's DerekAcorah.org. There's information on his appearances, on his shows, on his CDs, and more. Again, that's DerekAcorah.org. Thank you for listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Tim and I are going to be back after the top of the hour with more right after this.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.